and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 19th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you, Ted?
Good, good. Good to have you here. Well, Mariah, I just said July 19th, 2019, but Saturday, July 20th, 2019 is exactly 50 years, I believe it's 50 years to the day that man first stepped on the moon. Now, your father probably was not born at that time yet, so I will tell you stories about it. Have you ever seen, let me start right there. What's the perspective of someone for whom having landed on the moon is a fact that has always existed? There's this dividing line, right? I mean, for me, there was a time when no one had ever been on the moon.
Right? Okay, I see what you're saying.
Like, it was this huge thing, right? But then once it happens, somebody's born and it's ancient history, right? It happened in the past. I mean,
We've been to the moon and then we moved on. Yeah.
We moved on to the next thing. And the moon landing was quite an enormous undertaking in the 1960s. Everyone had seen the tape of John F. Kennedy, the commitment to go to the moon in 10 years, blah, 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 blah. But it really was a profoundly unifying activity at the time. I mean, the whole country was behind it. There was no internet, of course, and each launch was done live on TV. You get sent home from school so you could see it. It was just at the formative age for me where I was eating it up. And the whole idea of going into space and what they were going to do, it's quite a remarkable moment. And it represents quite a, I wouldn't say the pinnacle, but certainly a high point in kind of the technological prowess of the United States. Would you agree with that?
I mean, absolutely. I wasn't around to watch the actual landing, but you know, my 9-year-old son is obsessed with the moon landing, and we have watched all of the videos that we can get our hands on about Apollo and about the crew, and we've seen the ones that were in the movie theater. We haven't seen the most recent Apollo 11 one, but we have it on our list.
Really?
He has a model of the, you know, a Lego model that he built.
Really?
So, you know, it's something that just sort of speaks to how profound of an accomplishment it was that my 9-year-old son still venerates it.
Still is interested. Wow, that's very interesting because you think there's so many other distractions nowadays. There's so many other things kids could do. But I mean, I think it is. It's a profound cultural moment. And I guess the question is, as with all things that have to do with, well, let me put it this way. The effort to go to the moon is often cited as some kind of parallel for work on climate change, right? It's always dragged us, you know, we need an Apollo project for the moon. And it's not always clear to me that's a good analogy, right? What do you think?
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think we draw parallels to it because it's sort of like addressing climate change feels like this impossible thing. And I know in other podcasts, we've quoted that JFK, you let us do not what is easy, but that which is hard. And that's because it does seem like climate change seems like this impossible task. And it seemed like the moon was an impossible task. But there are some distinct differences that I think you're about to talk about.
Well, no, we found an article in Wired Magazine, right? That basically talks about the cultural concept of the moonshot in quotation marks, right? So tell me, what does it say?
Well, so the biggest difference that this article is talking about, and it talks about going to the moon, it talks about addressing climate change, building self-driving vehicles, ending cancer, all of these things have been called moonshots. And the author of this article basically says that's an ill-applied, it's Alex Davies who wrote this article for Wired, says that's an ill-applied use of the moonshot because you know a true moonshot goes all in, right? It's which, well, of course, we need all in for this kind of stuff too. So sorry, that's the parallel, right? All the climate change, addressing climate change, is an all in initiative. And so that's why we often kind of compare it to that. But the difference is that going to the moon was a very clear thing with a very clear ending goal. Right. We're going to go to the moon. We're going to land on the moon, and then we're going to go come home. That's it.
It's and we're
very,
done.
A very simple directive.
Right.
And ending cancer, addressing climate change, these are what the author calls nebulous concepts. They don't have a clear path to success, and thus it's harder to get really sort of everyone behind it in some way, because it's not an easy, straightforward path to do.
Right. You can't say it in one sentence. It's hard to say in one sentence, right? You know, we're going to go to the moon. Okay, you understand what the project's about. All these other things encompass so many other aspects that, it's not a clearly defined deliverable in the language of business, right?
Right. Yeah, and so the author suggests that instead it should be a moon boom.
Okay.
Right? So it should be, Alex said that we need moon booms, basically that we need, you know, a moon shot is limited by one direction and destination, and a detonation, a moon boom, has the habit of going everywhere at once. And that's what we need, is we need something that goes everywhere at once if we want to address climate change.
With all kinds of different technologies, all different approaches, cultural, artistic, medical, food, everything, right?
Right, yep. And we don't even know what will work and what will be successful. I was just reading about this book that's coming out, I think, in August of 2019, called Creative Climate Communications. And one of the things that they say in the overview for the book was that we don't need a silver bullet, we need silver buckshot. And I remember thinking, like, what? I don't know. And now it sort of really makes sense that, you know, saying that we need that silver buckshot to kind of reach a wider audience in all of the different ways that we need to address climate change effectively.
Yeah, well, I guess the question of the other side of the moonshot thing, which is, I do think, is more of a legitimate parallel to somehow using the idea for climate, is that for the Apollo project, there was a very large fraction of the budget, right? Something like 4% of the budget was tied up. I mean, that's a lot of money. And even at the time, there were people protesting, and probably legitimately so. It's like, you know, how can we have money to go to the moon when we don't have money to feed children, right? Which would be a legitimate question anytime in any place. I guess the only thing I would say is that it's not an either or. It's not like we couldn't feed everybody and go to the moon simultaneously. Putting that aside, the question of efforts to address climate change will require a huge financial commitment. Right? I mean, that's just sort of a given, that it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of corporate resource, you know, national resources to address climate change. And that, in some ways, is parallel to the Apollo project. So.
Yeah, although on the flip side of that, and again, this is where it becomes more complicated than just a single moonshot. On the flip side of that, if we don't address climate change, the costs are potentially bigger, right? There was a great article from back in June by Brad Plumer from the New York Times about companies seeing climate change hitting their bottom lines in the next 5 years. And one of the things that Brad talked about was that 215 of the world's 500 biggest corporations think that they potentially face roughly $1 trillion in costs related to climate change unless they take proactive steps to prepare. And, you know, there's a lot of jobs that will be created around addressing climate change. So there's, you know, a lot of economic development there. But again, it's very unknown. It's all modeled. Actually, one of the other things that they brought up in this article is we think that they use PG&E as a sort of case study on how we might think that it's only going to cost us, what did I say, $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. And then you look at PG&E, who said they actually did some estimates about how much it was going to cost them. And they guessed that
PG&E being California, right?
Pacific Gas and Electric, California's largest electric utility. They thought that it would be their wildfire risk in the American West would be around $2.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being $30 billion, right? Because of all these crazy fires, all the crazy fires. And PG&E had to file for bankruptcy protection. So look at that, look at those finances. And, we've, of course, talked ad nauseum about how the financial risk of doing nothing far outweighs the financial risk of addressing climate change. But it's they're starting to gather some really strong numbers that back that up.
And when you rewind to the idea of a national commitment on the order of the Apollo project to address climate change, it doesn't seem so bad given the fact that there's a payoff and then if we don't act, it's going to be even worse.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, for the Apollo project, they were just spending money just to sort of, in some ways, this article in Wired said that the space race was just one more front in the Cold War, right? It wasn't even, that was really, all the money was just being invested to sort of like flex our muscles and try and get third world countries to come to our side. And so we were spending all this money not actually to
get to the moon.
It was just purely to get to the moon and maybe gain some political prowess.
Well, I guess, one of the things that everyone should do is to keep your eyes open for all the articles that will appear over the next 10 days or so that talk about all of the wonderful things that we got because of the Apollo project, like microwave ovens and hand calculators and whatnot. But just imagine what's...
Cancer, the ways of... I think some of the ability to detect cancer came from...
As well, really.
NASA, yeah. I remember hearing Neil deGrasse Tyson talk about how some of that was the technology detection. Cancer detection came from some of the NASA stuff.
Well, I can only imagine that if we spent equivalent amounts of money to address climate change, there would be additional huge spinoffs of things that we haven't even figured out, what benefits they're going to give us. But speaking...
Yeah, although,
go ahead.
Well, along those lines, there was in this Wired article... I'm not exactly sure who wrote this, but somebody wrote an essay saying that because everything was rushed for NASA to get deadlines mm-hmm. done, that it was rushed. They rushed special purpose hardware rather than maximizing the scientific value of the missions. And so because of that, they sort of didn't develop things as thoughtfully or as long to have as a long-term use as they possibly could. Right. And I certainly think that's a lesson for us for climate action, although... Our deadline is a little bit more of a literal deadline, right? Oh, yeah. People will die if we do not address climate change. But it is something to be thoughtful and make sure that we're creating things that aren't going to create new problems for us down the road.
Well, there's a good segue to the other sort of related concept. So we have this idea that, we have the Apollo 11 landing, we talk about the moon program as some sort of a metaphor or a guide as to how we should address climate, and we've just been kind of through that. Our friend Dave Roberts, who always teaches us something over it from Vox, mm-hmm. started to talk about the fact that pure R&D on energy-related issues is a wildly underfunded but wildly valuable thing. And it's right in keeping with funding the Apollo project, right? Putting money into R&D because for example, something like 7 to 10% of the total CO2 that's emitted in the United States comes from the manufacture of cement. Right? And there's no way to, without a whole lot of R&D, you're not going to find new cement substitutes that don't emit CO2. But, that's a place where the government could dump a lot of money. And I think what the case that Roberts makes is that we're not doing that very well. And the most, that instead of spending money building wind turbines in the present with the technology we already have, it needs to be in parallel that we're dumping money into new, ever more advanced technologies that can then be given to the rest of the world to build as they build out the cultures south of the equator, right? China, Africa, all these places, India, they're going to need the latest technology, and we need to be developing that just on a global scale. I think he refers to it as the spillover of technology from development in the United, you know, in the developed world to be used in other places. I mean, this is the kind of place you could put a lot of money that's, I think, is quite beneficial. Did you get a chance, Mariah, to look at much of that article?
Yeah, I mean, so he sort of puts himself soundly in the deployment camp, right? The, like, let's get the technologies that we have out there and start using them.
Just forgive me for interrupting, but I mean, we've said it 100 times that we already have everything we need to address climate change, right? We have the technology. We just need the political will to put the wind turbines out. He's making a slightly different case and saying, yes, we have all that technology, but we need to keep pushing for new developments, right? That's the deployment versus development.
Right. I mean, he says that, right, there's the deployment and the innovation crowd, and he says he aligns very closely with the deployment crowd, but is... There were a couple reports, one by a group called Let's Fund, and I forget the name of the other group, maybe the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But these two reports basically are saying that innovation is more important, largely because there's 2 points. Emissions reduction in emerging economies is actually more important than emissions reductions in places like the United States, just because economies like China and India will have 75% of the global emissions by 2040. And if we don't start to address those, it doesn't matter how much we reduce the United States emissions, if we don't address those, all is lost, is basically mm-hmm. what he says. And he kind of points out, look, you know, a ton of carbon diverted from the atmosphere is a ton of carbon no matter what country you're doing it in. So you might as well do it in the countries where it's going to have the most effect. And so finding, as you said, building technologies that we can then pass on to these developing countries where they can benefit from the fact we have the money to do the research and then give them that technology to deploy over there
mm-hmm.
is basically a public good in a lot of ways.
Right. I mean, I think
public good.
It is the kind of quote unquote moonshot concept that you can apply to climate change of developing all this kind of technology with well-funded efforts and literally with the intention of distributing them to people probably at a loss, right? But I mean, distributing to the people who need it so that we can save the planet, which of course is the name of the game, right?
Well, we'd like it to be.
We'd like it to be. All right, well, I tell you what we should do. There you go. There's the discussion of the Apollo project on its 50th anniversary. I can't believe it.
I do have to just throw in the one more cute little thing that he said that Alex said in the moonshot, that
mm-hmm.
we should leave moonshot, that phrase, to the Apollo mm-hmm. and also to Wally Moon, the guy, the Dodgers. My dad would appreciate this. He was a big LA Dodgers fan. The Dodgers guy that used to hit the park. He figured out a way to constantly get.
What he was saying was that when the Giants the Dodgers initially went to LA, they were in a football field, so they put the left field wall, much like Fenway Park, in too close. And this guy figured out how to hit pop ups, which would then every one of them would go out of the park because the wall was so close, and they were called moonshots.
Wally, right? Moonshots. Yep. So he says, leave moonshot to those. Keep it away from climate change.
So I'm going to stay with moon boom. All right. Well, there you go. What we'll do is we'll put up links to all that stuff on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can send us an email with your idea about what a podcast should be about to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Please send us an email. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, etc., including now Spotify. We'll close. We want to thank Mr. D.R. Tucker for all of his unending technical and research support. And we want to close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. We must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and enjoy all the reminiscing about the moonshot. Take care. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.